and you're very welcome to this week's episode of They Mess You Up, the podcast with myself, Dr. Ciara Kelly.
And Dr. Richard Hogan.
And this week we're going to talk about, I think it's a big one.
Yeah, no, it is.
I really do. Lots of studies would suggest that Irish people, which we both are among the loneliest in the world. We're going to talk about loneliness and why we're lonely and what it means to be lonely and can you do anything about being lonely. I think it is actually quite hard, Richard, to admit.
No, you're right. There's a stigma around it.
If you're lonely, because I think it's very close to saying, I have no friends.
Yeah, no.
And we are still very tribal and we are almost afraid that somebody who has, if someone thinks you have no friends, that that
statement
will repel other people, it's almost like a contagion.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually.
You know, oh, if no one likes you, then I won't like you either.
Because I'll be seen to like the person who no one likes. And
so loneliness, there is a stigma. Mm. And if you can't talk about something, if you can't, like, I think of all the things that we've become able to talk about over the last few years. Mental health became something mm-hmm. we could talk about where we didn't before, mm-hmm. depression, things like that. But loneliness, still really
Absolutely.
Hard. And what made me want to talk about it was I saw a quote from Joanne McNally, she's absolutely brilliant, Irish comedian.
Yeah.
She did an interview in iPaper and she said, I was painfully lonely and that led me to becoming problematically independent.
Great line.
I thought it was brilliant. But I also, and I thought it showed huge insight, huge self-awareness and a bravery in saying it. But that might be one of the routes people would take if they are lonely. They might become just, you know, no one wants me and I don't want anyone and I'll become really independent. But there are obviously other roads people take as well. I also thought, though, Joanne McNally is somebody who everyone likes,
mm-hmm.
who has a popularity and has an invincibility. So she can say, I'm lonely.
Yeah.
People often talk about being lonely in the past tense
mm-hmm.
because
there's something about overcoming it that you're not in it currently.
They don't want to say they are now.
Yeah.
But I thought she has an armor so she can say it. But for lots of people, saying I am lonely is awful.
It is. And I just think, first of all, as we get into it, like I think it's really important to say to people, loneliness is a part of the human condition.
I think you're
to
100% right.
To exist is to be lonely at times. I've felt it profoundly. I don't know, have you felt it?
Often. Not always.
Yeah, but often.
But often.
And perhaps even in a room, in the busiest room, you might feel the most lonely.
If you are in a room full of people who you feel disconnected from, but you sort of think they are connected to each other, mm-hmm. that can be a very lonely space.
Absolutely. In the room, the women come and go, talking of Michelangelo. Do you ever read that Proof Rock poem?
No, you're doing this thing
where you're T.S. Eliot is just talking
I'm
about
quoting Joanne McNally and you're quoting
T.S. Eliot.
T.S.
Eliot.
I know Cats the musical and that's about as close to T.S. Eliot.
But anyway, the whole poem was about isolation and loneliness, and what was so remarkable about that poem was that it was
Have a poet soul.
I do have a poet soul. I do love poetry. What is remarkable about that is that it's a man talking about being lonely in early 1900s where men drank silent and were quiet.
The human condition. All my years of clinical practice could be distilled down into one line, I think, which is that all of us go through life experiencing often painful emotions and believing
we're the only ones.
That we're the only one, even though these things are universal.
And it's so important to say.
So isolating.
When I'm talking with teenagers, I'm always saying it. I felt this and I felt that and I came from this house and I experienced this. My father had been an alcoholic and I can see them going, my God, I thought you had everything and you were, you know, like, absolutely.
You were like this slick model of suaveness
and you
didn't
have
just come
this,
from nowhere.
Yeah, you have a Fulbright scholarship and you do that and you work on the traders, you do this and you have a TV program. And so they have a vision of you, like Raised by the Village, of like just being, everything's perfect. And I'm like, no, dyslexia growing up, you know, and that spelling got in my way there and all the rest of it and addicted father and all. And so there was loads of times there to my adolescence, and I'm sure you felt it too, absolutely isolated and lonely and wondering, will this work out for me? Will I be able to become
a
person?
I think adolescence is one of the loneliest.
Because, you know why? Brain regions associated with peer reinforcement, attention, feedback is more sensitive than ever in your existence as a Homo sapien. I don't think you care too much what someone says about you now, particularly. A little bit, maybe, but not massively.
The odd thing, the odd barb gets through, But most of them not.
Some of them,
I find them quite funny.
Yeah, I enjoy them personally, to be honest. You know? And so when I was a teenager, though, it was a different thing because those brain regions are so sensitive. And so we're looking out for feedback and peer reinforcement.
You're so desperate to be part of a tribe.
Exactly. And Kira, honestly, the amount of people who come into my clinic, teenagers, who are lonely, is absolutely frightening. And the World Health Organization came out recently with data to say teenage girls are the most lonely cohort group ever in the history of like humanity. These are the loneliest group we
have. And isn't that, and there are other lonely groups too, by the way. I mean, it is a human condition. I think single older men are.
Oh my God, again. Yeah, absolutely.
Teenage girl. Yeah. We can identify.
People who are elderly, 60s, 70s and 80s and that kind of stuff. Incredible amount of loneliness in there. And I also think in Ireland, why it's particularly profound in Ireland is we have fundamentally let rural Ireland down with access to things. And like, you know, for some people, and I talk all over Ireland and I meet the great people of Ireland and they might tell me the only person they met in the month was the tramp of the postman or the milkman coming, the milk person coming up the door there. You know what I mean? And
I remember during COVID being out for a walk one day and an elderly lady on the road asked me a question. I can't remember, directions or something. And I stopped and I chatted to her for a while. And I'm quite chatty, as you know.
I have noticed.
But I was chatting to her for a while. And as we were about to part company, she said, "You're the first person I've spoken to in about 5 days."
Jesus, lovely.
And I have to say, I almost welled up in front of her, but I didn't want to because I went, oh, and then I just talked to her for a little bit longer.
And then she said, please go away. Stop talking to me.
Jesus, but do you remember COVID was I know. Horrendous for people. If you lived alone during COVID, in your bubble was the bubble one.
Yeah, yeah.
That was horrific.
Horrendous. You couldn't go down to the shop, the pub and all the rest, whatever it is, the post office.
I thought it was interesting what Joanne McNally said. She said she was painfully lonely. Mm-hmm. Loneliness can feel like a physical pain
in
your chest.
It is. And it can cause early death. It has deleterious impact on your mental health.
Loneliness is up there as a risk factor for early death with things like smoking.
Yeah, they say 15 cigarettes is the same as loneliness or something like that. They have some statistics like that.
People don't realise how impactful it is. But it can feel like a physical pain. You've an empty...
Well, it is.
It's like hunger.
It's evolutionary. That pain is absolutely evolutionary because when we started off as Homo sapiens, we were very communal, you know. It was all community. And so none of us, we were all together. There was no such thing as paternity and there was no such thing as land. And so our brain is wired to be together. And so if you were outside your tribe, it meant certain death. Right, so if you're isolated from the tribe, it means certain death. And so there's a part of the brain called the dorsal portion of the anterior cingulate cortex that tells me if I hit my hand with a hammer, it signals pain. It hijacked that signal thousands of years ago. So when I'm outside the tribe, it would tell you get back inside the fucking tribe or you're doomed.
And it is why we will compromise ourselves in all sorts of ways to fit in. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the human condition.
Absolutely.
Don't feel too bad if you do that because everyone does that. It makes it harder if you're somebody like a neurodivergent type of person because compromising yourself is awkward because you don't know how
exhausting
to, and you're not, you have to mask and do all sorts of things and you can't read social cues properly. But that thing about trying to fit in, like little kids don't have it so much. They take their environment and their people in their lives for granted to some extent. But as you get that older into adolescence where you're now really aware of how much you need your tribe and how insecure that makes you feel, maybe particularly if you're a 14-year-old girl or something and everybody's
hanging out, going on Starbucks
or posting about each other behind each other's backs
whatever,
and all like, the stuff that kind of goes on.
Clicky.
The loneliness,
it's profound there.
It is a profound thing.
And I'd always say as a tip there to that, a really important tip for parents, because, you know, none of us want to see our children lonely. But again, as I said at the start, it is a part of the human condition and it is something your children will experience and they will suffer as they go through life. And that's and I wouldn't say they shouldn't. That's kind of what they need to experience at times, to be able to manage it. And so when they experience it later on, they know that experience. It's immunizing a child to that. First thing I say to parents, the biggest tip against this, because I worked as a teacher for, I was going to say thousands of years. It felt like thousands
he's been
of
alive
years.
For he's like
this
an
is why
oracle.
I'm so wise.
<He's>
Come and sit next to the oracle.
Old.
The oracle of Delphi. But thousands of years.
Delphi Mayo.
Delphi Mayo, yeah, exactly. But anyway,
the
so
tip.
The tip, exactly. Thank you, Kira. The tip is widen out your friendship group. Widen out your child's friendship group. That makes them bulletproof to these things.
So even if the school pals
fall away.
It's the football pals that step up, or it's the
hockey
scouts,
pals, the scouts, whatever the GAA.
Or the different groups of people in school.
Immunizes you to like, because you know,
cliques in school.
Teenage girls particularly, cliques, and 1 week you're in, 1 week you're out. And
just have a few cliques.
Because as I was saying about the teaching part, I used to see it so much when a kid would come in with their best friend from primary school in first year, and they're only 13 or whatever, 12 or 13. And by November, that friend had moved on to a cooler group of friends, as they perceived it.
Of course.
And then one who was dominated by the bigger friend or more powerful friend is left absolutely isolated and lonely, and they're having their lunch in the toilet. They don't want to be seen to be having their lunch. I mean, it's social death here to be in the canteen on your own, eating a sandwich on your own, and everyone else chatting, and you're just there awkwardly on your own. So it's like the immunization to that is widened it out so that they can move around.
There's also, though, I think this is an important point, you have to learn to sit with uncomfortable feelings.
Absolutely.
And feel them, acknowledge them, recognize they're there, but also know that they're not permanent.
Mm.
How you feel in this moment
transient.
Now is not how you're necessarily going to feel in 3 days' time, mm-hmm. or even this afternoon or whatever it is, because circumstances change. You could walk out the door and bump into somebody and your whole life changed. Everything.
Yeah.
So learning to sit with them and going, I don't feel good in this moment, but that is not my permanent state. I think that is important.
That's a resilient mind there.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing. And how much I often think when I have uncomfortable feelings like loneliness or anxiety or you know, those slightly irrational
in them a little
things
bit.
That we have sometimes where we're worrying about something silly
or
what somebody or what you said yourself or those kinds of things. I go, I sort of say, okay, this is how you're feeling now, but you
weren't feeling that yesterday.
No, and you'll have forgotten about it, and knowing me in about 20 minutes. So, but I'm not trying to be trite because
you're right though.
But you need to learn to sit with those feelings and whatever,
and maybe listen to them.
Yeah, but also learn that things like loneliness. One of my four kids, when they went into secondary school, I still think it was the right decision, and that they would agree with me now. But we sent them to secondary school, and they didn't know one person in their year.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know anybody in their year, and loads of reasons were behind that decision, and it actually went very well. But on the second day, they went to school kind of bolstered on day one and ready to, you know, go for it. On day two, they came home a bit more deflated. And I talked to them and I said, why are you feeling like this today?
Mm.
And they said, I ate lunch on my own.
That's a brutal thing.
Brutal thing. And my response to that was, OK, but here's the thing. You don't know people because of time, because you met them yesterday.
Yeah.
So they're not your friends. This
right
is
now,
true.
Right now.
Right now. That won't be the same in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 6 months, 4 years. The school is not a sprint. It's a marathon. You will know these people. They aren't going to stay strangers.
Yes. It's great. I mean, that's the image.
And that will happen. And indeed, it did.
And so when he goes off into life and he sits in the canteen, doesn't know anyone.
Yes.
He knows this is transient.
Yes.
I will get to know people.
And learning that,
yeah.
Christ, that's a life lesson, isn't
it?
That I am the new person here, or maybe I'm one of the new people here, but we won't always be the new person or the new people.
Yeah.
We will become familiar.
Yeah.
We will take the bus together or the dart together, or we will, you know, sit in class together, and we will get to know each other despite ourselves almost, by
You're
osmosis
right.
almost.
Yeah, yeah.
And let that happen. You just have to hold your nerve and give it a bit of time.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think small talk, which is something that we would have grown up with, you know, in the 80s and all that.
Yeah.
You just chat to people at the bus, you chat here and tell. I think the phone has gotten in the way of that.
Oh.
And what's something I would have seen in the last number of years is that students who don't have their best friend in school would not want to go to school themselves. So that's the erosion of confidence. You know, what your child developed in that moment was the ability to kind of like move with whatever's in front of them and to not take that immediate emotional response so deeply and not to be overwhelmed by it and think, okay, tomorrow I might get to know people and maybe identify people I like. And it's a skill that we have. I'm sitting with teenagers all the time, just mentoring, not deep psychoanalysis or any of that stuff, just mentoring them about, because they're saying to me, I have no friends, what do I do? And I say, well, let me know people who do have friends in your school. Let's say, well, John and Paul and whatever it is, they're great friends. And say, what do you think they do to be great friends? Well, they message each other. And I said, do you message anyone? And they say, no. I said, why wouldn't you message someone? Why don't you? Because they're terrified of feeling like a, you know, a weirdo or needy.
Well, this also feeds into why some people feel lonely because some people have a really significant fear of rejection.
That's it. That's exactly
and
where it's going there.
If you have a really big fear of rejection,
you reject yourself first.
You get your own spanking first. Yeah. So you step back. Yeah. You step away.
So you won't be hurt.
So you can't get hurt. Yeah. But
you're then hurting yourself.
You're then isolating yourself. And so loneliness often comes from that. And that struck me as something to do with the Joanne McNally thing. She said she became
problematically independent.
That's to me someone who goes,
I don't need anyone.
I'm lonely. So I'm on my own, but I'll make a go of it.
I don't need you. Yeah.
I don't need you. And if you're ever seeing this, Joanne McNally, I'm not trying to psychoanalyze you, even though we are psychoanalyzing you. But so many of us, I put myself in that, protect ourselves in that way. And that sometimes means we withdraw and then we wonder why we're lonely.
Yeah.
But lots of us have friendships based on other people coming to us and find it harder
to come to,
go to other people.
Yeah, yeah.
And for you to have a true friendship, it has to
work.
Be a two-way street, doesn't it?
That's what I see in adolescence currently, particularly when we're just talking about that period of time now, right now, is that the fear of rejection, the fear of seeming needy, the fear of like sending something into the Snapchat saying, what are you doing for the weekend? You know, the fear of people saying, we're doing our own thing, and then, you know, not being invited. All that fear motivates them to kind of isolate themselves and stay at home and not go out, because that's too much social rejection there. And so that hurts too much. So then I just don't do that. I'm hurt all the time, but it's on my terms. And it's like, you're trying to help your child
I'm
out
hurt,
of that.
But I'm hiding that from you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Think,
yes.
Although maybe
exactly.
not.
If we move on from adolescence, let's say, you know, Gen Zers now are particular. I'm doing a study at the moment with a group of Gen Zers, very lonely. You know, not going out as much, not dating as much, not socially as active as, you know.
I would come back
Xers.
To COVID again. Yeah. I think the lockdowns were so incredibly hard on them.
Mm-hmm.
I think they missed all sorts of things. They missed the teen
Gaeltacht,
they
the
missed
school
snogs,
they
missed
they
missed the fooling around.
Yeah.
They missed all the stuff that would have
naturally
launched us into early adulthood. They missed an awful lot of those things, and I don't think that was good for them at all.
No, absolutely. And I met so many people who were in first year college at the time who were looking so forward to college to have their friends there, and that was all wiped out.
Yeah.
And so we have a whole cohort that missed in like normative steps, you know, along the way.
And then trying to rebuild those abilities. But, and I fully accept that teenage girls, the loneliest group.
Oh my God.
I believe it, as I say, I think older single men, awful as well.
Terrible, yeah.
Really, really lonely. But I think all of us have it to a greater or lesser extent. It just depends on how much we have.
Yeah, exactly.
So
and how we deal with it.
I have felt lonely, you have felt lonely.
Yeah.
But I am not persistently lonely,
no.
I'm glad to say.
No.
But lots of people are at all ages persistently mm-hmm. lonely.
Yeah,
even within relationships and everything, sometimes people feel lonely if they don't feel seen, if they don't feel heard, if they don't feel able to express themselves.
You're absolutely right. And what I would see, you know, 47.2 is the most unhappy year as an adult, and 14 is a teenage girl, and 15 for a teenage boy and all that. And what often happens to people, and this is why I wrote my last book, was to try to make people a bit more intentional about the relationships they kind of go into. Because we kind of go into college and we may meet them at the college bar, we fall into that relationship, and then we find them reasonable enough and they find me reasonable enough, and then you have kids and all
that. Not objectionable. Anyway.
Objectionably awful. And you know, and so you kind of just fall in. And these are life stages, because it's kind of like drifting along, and then all of a sudden you got a couple of kids, and then, you know, 40s are particularly problematic.
Rush.
I mean, they're so stretched, the 40s. I feel like I'm going to set up a kind of, you know, an 40s anonymous group, because I think they're so problematic, and you lose each other and intimacy drops down and you lose your friends, you know, and all the rest of it. And then you're thinking, 47, is this my career? Is this it? That big existential thing, is this it? And am I close to my partner? You're passing each other just like ships in the night, and you're just handing out chores. One isn't doing their role. One is doing more of the role. The burden is on one person. And it can be, you know, that quiet desperation idea. It can be an absolutely quiet, lonely existence that you're living, not connected to anything really.
And there will be people who will hear that and go, I'd love that, because I never married and I live on my own.
Yeah.
I have no partner, and I come home in the evening and I make dinner for one.
Yeah.
And I have a cat, and or maybe I don't even have a cat, and I could go, days without having a conversation that wasn't just perfunctory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe a work conversation, you have that email or you know, can I pay for this in a shop? There are people who are deeply isolated, yeah, and deeply lonely. So,
and there are people who didn't get married and they're happy out. You know what I mean? There are people who decided not to have a relationship with that.
Not everyone is lonely. Yeah. But there are loneliness, and it is, there's a profound sadness to it, I think.
Yeah, I think.
Go through life feeling unconnected.
Well,
I think that's
the word. The word I'd always use is mattering.
They fuck you up, but never call, they mess you up. I do think the roots of it are often in childhood, an inability to attach or connect. Maybe,
but
also a fundamental.
No, you're right.
Disconnect early.
But also, here's the thing as well. It can be such a random thing. The classroom you get placed into, you can see with your kids. You'd see one class of girls and they were so supportive and lovely and gorgeous. The next class of your kid, it's a bit toxic. You know, they weren't very nice. They weren't supportive.
I have four kids. I would say three of their classes were the lovely ones.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just random.
And there's no difference.
Yeah, yeah, it's
and
just
one,
random.
One of the kids' class was...
not great.
Desperate.
Yeah, not supportive.
Not good vibes.
No, not good
fractious
vibes. But you see, that can happen. It can randomly happen that you go into the school, so you don't make a connection there. You go into work, don't make a connection there. And so you can randomly...
And also within your family, there are kids, and we spoke about it before in a pod, who sense that their parents don't maybe like them or love them the way
they
should.
Yeah, yeah.
And that almost is going to hardwire you for loneliness.
Well, it will make you.
If you sense that intuitively as a child... If you're not connected to the people you were supposed to connect with from the get-go,
they will disrupt everything. Yeah, yeah.
People later on,
because and even your
hard. And I do think we're much more clued in about neurodivergence now, and that is hardwired for a bit of loneliness too, because difference. You know, we're talking about being tribal. Mm-hmm. Fitting in is about commonality and sameness. Difference puts you. You know, the kids talk about the alphas and the betas, but the sigmas, the one who stands alone, those things all contribute to this.
We're not great with difference, you know what I mean?
No, we're not. That's evolution, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
That we still...
this homogenous type of...
The stranger, the different, we view with suspicion, even left-handed people.
Yeah, exactly, the stranger.
The word for left-handed in Italy is sinistra. It's sinister.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's something weird about you.
Something there.
Use your left hand. You know, so difference we perceive with suspicion, and that's a problem, because if you're the person perceived that way, you're going to feel a bit lonely.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you think about, say, if we're looking at, if we move on from Gen Z to parents and your 40s and 50s and all that, so for men, testosterone is falling down. I would say, you said that men are very lonely. That's absolutely borne out with the men I would sit with in my clinic. No friends. Don't want to say that they've no friends, but they've lost all friendship contact. And then the women I work with would be overburdened with like incredible responsibilities, and then menopause is coming in there maybe. And so there's this real... unsettled feeling in your midlife.
Think, and you always be careful how you talk about suicides and all of that. But we always think that suicidality is a big feature of young men.
No, it's higher in adults than men.
But middle-aged men is
higher now. Yeah,
yeah, it's a huge cohort there, and that says something about how middle-aged men are feeling.
And the silence that they experience that. And the word I always think here is so important for like loneliness, it's mattering, you know. Because you can be in a room full of people and feel lonely. You can be on your own and not be lonely. I'm often on my own and there's not a bit of loneliness going on there. I love my own company and all the rest of it. But, you know, so you can, these things really matter. And so the idea of being connected to things and belonging to things and having a voice and things and mattering to people, that's the real important thing.
It reminded me of many years ago when I was a junior doctor and I was in hospital. I had a man came in through A&E and he was in his 60s and he had made an attempt on his own life.
Yeah.
And I was the doctor who he was telling, and he said, "Oh no, it was a mistake." He minimized
it
left,
nothing.
Right, and
it was
center.
Nothing.
It was nothing. It was, you know. And I'm fine now, and I'm going to go.
Impulsive moment.
It was nothing. It was nothing. And his family said, "No, we're really shocked. We can't. He's not. This isn't him at all." And something in him terrified me.
I said,
"I'm not letting you go." And he said, "You don't have the power." And I kind of fudged it.
Yeah,
you sort of have power.
Yeah, you do.
You do and you don't. I would have needed a bit more to actually have him
sectioned.
And I said, "No, I actually do, and I want you to stay." And he ended up staying in hospital for a number of weeks after that. And he came and he found me before he left, and he said, you saved my life. Now, God, I'm not saying this to...
Yeah, I know. I'm not saying this to...
But I said, did I? And he said, yeah. He said, I was going to leave the hospital. He said, I thought I had you convinced. He said, I was going to throw myself in the river. And that's what he said. He said, but you didn't let me go. And I said, I just sensed that you...
Yeah, you weren't right.
Didn't add up. You had made a reasonably serious attempt on your life, but you were making out that it was nothing. And to me, those two things, I didn't believe what you were telling me. And he said, no, you were right. And he said, I am much better now. But he was like a different man. All these shutters were down when I was talking to him, and now he was different.
Yeah.
And I just think that we...
Hide
men
it.
In particular.
Hide
obviously,
it.
Yeah, the masking, the hiding, the inability to talk. His family were in agreement that there was nothing wrong with him because he was hiding it from them as well. It was all of that. And it stayed with me to this day, and it must be 20 years ago.
And I think women, it's an incredible story there. And I think that women probably mask and hide the inequity of burden of like chores and stuff. And I think that's the
cognitive workload.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I think... For people listening, loneliness, a lot of people go, that's me, I'm hearing me, but what do I do? We always think when we're lonely that it's because other people are holding back from us.
Right.
We think that. And that's the mindset of the lonely. But no one is going to save you from your loneliness but you.
Absolutely.
This is how I feel about it. So that thing about widening your circle, it's, you know, as you say, the scouts, the football, the hockey, the school. But for adulthood, there's also join the choir,
join
the
groups,
walking group. Even if you're the person who's going to be the quiet one in the group, you're not going to be the life.
But at least you're together.
But you are communing with people.
And because we're mammals. And we're designed for that community.
Most people don't mind someone turning up who's quiet. They don't mind someone turning up and just hanging around who isn't bells and whistles. They're perfectly happy for you to join their walking group,
be a part of
their bridge group, their choir, their anything. They're go to a comedy club and sit in the audience, sit with people.
Just get close to something.
Because I think we tell ourselves when we're lonely that it's because no one likes us, or it's because we've been rejected, or it's because we are other people are withholding from us. But actually, it's very often self-perpetuating that we are, in fact, keeping people at arm's length ourselves, that fear of rejection and all that. So the answer is widening your horizons, isn't it?
I think
even
so.
Even if that doesn't sit easily with us to start off with.
What I'd always say when I'm working with adults on this topic, because it's a huge, there's an epidemic of loneliness.
I'm starting to feel a bit lonely now. Yeah. I think I'm tapping into it too strongly.
Well, we all feel it.
My empathy is going into now.
Here's
I'm feeling lonely.
A tip I would say, right? And it's the amount of people who write to me, actually handwritten letters, not emails now, to my clinic when they do
That's
this.
Quite a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's lovely. I sit down and I read these letters. It's really beautiful. I'd say, right, look, let's just think about this. In our 20s, we all had probably a good few friends, right?
Yeah.
And as we get through life and we have kids and all that, it's like Friends, the sitcom, you know. They're all great friends in New York in the one apartment at 20, but at 30 they're all going into the suburbs and then they disappear, right? And that's kind of life.
Yeah.
But so what I'd say is, if you had a friend that you liked, not a friend that you didn't particularly like, but if you had a friend in your 20s or your teenage years, whatever, in school, that you really liked and you really got on and they made you laugh, because laughing is a really good antidote to loneliness.
It's
in your body and you feel it fully. If you had someone who was always good crack and you liked them, reach out to them, send them a message, because I guarantee you're thinking about them and you'd like to message them. Reach out and just message them and say, I was thinking about you today, I hope all is going well in your life, and see, because what's the worst that could happen? They ghost you, right? But that's the worst thing that could happen.
But you've lost nothing.
You've lost nothing. And it's such an important, like, it's funny, because when I said that there before, I do these little hacks, and I had so many people from my school contact me, say, oh my God, Richard, you know, I just blocked them straight away. Who's got room for that?
You are the ghoster.
No, I'm only messing. It was just so lovely to hear from friends that you knew when you were 14 and 15 and knew you at that particular time in your life. Reach out to people.
Text. About 2 weeks ago to a girl I haven't seen her in years, I was pals with in school, because I was sitting in a hairdresser's and they were playing an 80s soundtrack on the
whatever.
And all of the songs for whatever reminded me of this one person, because they must have been...
I think we're alone now. You're like, oh my God, I'm lonely. Tiffany, shut up.
No, but I actually... And I thought, do you know what would be nice?
Yeah.
To send them a message and just say, do you know what?
I'm thinking of you. Yeah, exactly.
But I actually wasn't looking for it. And they actually replied and they said, oh my God, it's really nice to hear from you. And we had a little, you know, four texts or something.
Yeah.
But it was a nice thing. You're totally right.
Absolutely. Just reach out.
But that's the thing. Reach out. And if one person rejects you, grand.
It's not even rejection.
It's not even
it's
anything.
It's just like whatever.
But also, you've lost nothing because you didn't have them in the first place.
But you'd be surprised. You'll be surprised how many people are feeling the same thing that you're feeling but haven't got the courage to dare disturb the universe.
I like when people message me, you know. Now, sorry.
Go on, Kira, tell us.
To them all because I sometimes kind of get distracted.
Yes.
But there's something nice in thinking
ADHD,
that somebody...
ADHD, by the way, but go on.
If that wasn't already obvious. I just think we tell ourselves when we're lonely it's because how other people are treating us, but actually it's
break that narrative.
How we are behaving ourselves. Yeah. And if you can
reach out,
turn it on its head and go, what do I do to change my loneliness? It's actually really simple stuff. Yeah. It's the reaching out little by little and building confidence from doing so.
Yeah. I think that's probably our lot for today,
I
Kira.
Think so.
Thank you guys for listening in. Please give us, if you like the pod, please give us a 5-star review and like and subscribe the podcast, please, for more content. And please join us on Instagram where you can send us a couple of DMs if you want to message us and ask us to talk about anything.
They mess you up pod is the Instagram.
They mess you up the pod.
We won't answer the DMs. We're not going to be engaging in DM
what?
Answers, but we will do pods.
I'll answer your DM to mind her. I'll answer your DM. I'll come back to you, don't worry.
I'm not going to let him answer that.
But please, you know, if you want us to talk about anything, that's what we want this podcast to be. Talk about the dark corners that people don't talk about. And please let us know what it is you want us
to
talk.
Let's look under the carpet.
Yeah. Till next week. See you then.